Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm absolutely thrilled that you are here. Today, I am going to be talking to two authors and humor writers. I hope I can keep them to in check before I'll totally lose control of this, because they're much more quick-witted than I am, that's for sure. On the studio line, I have Lee Gaitan. How are you doing, Lee?
I'm great. I have recovered. As you know, I've had a few setbacks, but I am here and I'm so excited to finally be here. I didn't cancel on you today.
Okay. Well, that's good.
I haven't broken this many dates since like high school.
Well, I wouldn't doubt that you were a heartbreaker too. And also Dave Jaffe. Dave, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Bill. How are you today?
I'm doing excellent. Now, both of these fine people have been on the program before. But just to give you some background without going into a lengthy detail, but, like they were born, we'll spare some of the details, but just to give you an idea.
That we don't have to be anywhere, Bill, so go ahead. Go for all the details.
And we kind of like to use the word hatched when you're referring to Dave, but whatever.
Hatched, that's good. I'll start with Dave. Dave's book, Sleeping Between Giants, book one. Is it Bud Lee? Is that how
Bud
you say it?
Yes,
Bud Lee. Bud Lee. Okay. The early year is based on his National Society of Newspaper Columnists award-winning blog. Correct. His book also won the Indies Today 2019 Best Humor Book Award and the 2021 International Book Awards for Humor. He's a writer, a columnist, and a former Chicago reporter. And I bet you he's got some interesting stories. He writes for such various outlets as Humor Outcast and the Huffington Post, National Public Radio, and National Lampoon. Sleeping Between Giants, life, if you can call it that, with a terrier, grew out of Dave's affinity for dogs. And we're going to be talking about a little bit about his book today. Lee is also an award-winning author and four books, including the Amazon number one bestseller, My Pineapples Went to Houston, and that was the first edition, and her 2018 release, Light Wines and Laughter, which garnered three international book awards and for which she was named a first place winner for the Georgia Independent Author of the Year. Her work has been featured in the Huffington Post, Irma Bombeck Humor Writers Workshop, The Good Men Project, Mothers Always Right, and that's right with a W, Enchanted Conversations, and Bella Grace, among others. Her most recent release, My Pineapples Went to Houston, second edition, was just named Maincrest Media Award winner. So both of you guys have the cred when it comes to humor writing, and that's kind of what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk a little bit about the methodology of writing and some other things. And I guess I'll start, I'm going to pose the first question, but we'll start with Lee, okay? The pandemic, that's been, overshadowing a lot of us. So it's going on 2 years now. It's hard to believe. There's been political, racial strife, economic troubles. How do you find something funny to write about?
I pretty much don't. So I'm kind of done here. But thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome.
I do want to stick with the intro. You did that great job with that. Thanks so much. This is something that Dave and I have struggled with. And I think every writer, probably every person on the face of the earth. I saw a great post on Facebook today. And you know how when we get down to the end of the year, traditionally you'll see, people saying, how are you going to finish the year strong? And did you accomplish the goals you set back in January and all that? And someone had a response that I think it was, someone on Twitter or something, but it was wonderful. It said, hey, if you managed to just get through last year or this year, it's a win. Please don't put the pressure on yourself when people are losing, parents and jobs and finances and everything else. If your head is still above water, you're doing okay. And that's something that Dave and I struggle a lot with as humor writers. And I think one of the things that really has helped me, and I hope it's helped Dave, or at least maybe he'll say it has, is finding a kindred spirit to connect with. If you're talking specifically about writing, I mean, obviously, you know, in life in general, your friends, your family, et cetera. But if you're trying to write during this pandemic, when you don't have a lot of interaction and every day the news is not wonderful, finding someone else that you connect with and click with. And Dave and I have been so fortunate, you know, from the minute we met at a writer's conference about what, Dave? Four or five years ago.
Yes.
We were actually escaped. We were actually, I'm not kidding you, right, Dave? We were running out of the writer's party before the cops got there.
And a little rowdy.
These are adults, and they had to call the cops because were too loud. So Dave and I were sneaking out of the party. We didn't know each other. We met up at the elevator, and he told me he was on the lam. And if he was, you know, arrested, I was going to be a parole violation.
I told Lee that I was wanted in 11 states. I couldn't take another bust. So
exactly.
And she said to me,
I wasn't wanted in any states.
Right. And she said that we were waiting at the elevator. Lee said, "You're one of the humor writers, aren't you?"
You're one of those.
Well, we stood there and talked for about 25 minutes as the elevator doors kept opening and closing, and people gave us a lot of strange looks. But Lee touches on some really good points about not being productive in the last year and a half. I mean, I spent, you know, a year and a half hiding in the basement behind the furnace under a plastic tarp talking to a bag of potato chips. So, you know, I say to anybody who is writing or doing anything, but writing is what I know, don't beat yourself up for not producing. It's been really hard. And also have confidence that your brain remains productive even if you're not writing. If you have a bent towards humor, you can't shut that off. It's I'm writing even when I'm not writing.
Exactly.
Early in the pandemic, you know, I remember hearing a story about dogs that were being trained to sniff out COVID. And that kind of bounced around in my head for a while. And it finally led to a piece where the dogs in the dog park have invited a COVID sniffing dog as a guest speaker. And he's there to talk about it. And he has an address to all the gathered dogs where he begins, the researchers have me sniff things. And sometimes I get a cookie. I'll take questions now. And that's really, that's really all he had to say. But it comes from letting that bounce around, not pushing that. I had that story playing around in my head for weeks before I finally said, you know, I think I could do something with this.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dave and I were saying exactly to piggyback on what you said. It's exactly, and we have talked about this, even when you're not actively sitting at, you know, at your keyboard and writing or making notes or whatever, I always think of it, and we kind of agree, it's like, you know, the background apps that are always running on your phone and sapping my energy. You are processing. You're processing the whole time. And like Dave said, maybe, you know, the mood, this has been very difficult. So you're not able to sit down at that moment and tap something out like you could have, you know, maybe last year or whatever. But it's in there and it's going. It's, you're taking things in and you're making connections. And, you know, one night you're in the shower and you go, oh my gosh, I know the word I need and I can write a story around that. Yeah. Or I know what to do with that. So don't, exactly what Dave said, don't beat yourself up. Don't pressure yourself. Just know that it's still there. It's going to come back. And you're processing, even if you're not writing at the moment, it will be there for you.
Yeah. Well, I was lucky enough to meet you both. I met you both through humoroutcast.com. Mm-hmm. And I do want to say hi to all the people at humoroutcast.com.
Yeah.
We want to say hi to Donna Kavanaugh. And she is the person behind Corner Office Books, HO Press, Shore House Books, lots of different independent, I guess, is that a good way to put it? She helps independent writers and all that.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And she does a great job. And humoroutcast.com. I believe you both have written for that at different times.
Indeed.
Yes. And they update the content pretty much every day. And it's a funny place to go visit. It's a place to take a humor break. So do go ahead and check that out. Well, I started with Lee before, so I'll start with Dave now. It has been said that all humor comes from pain. I should be hysterical, right? What are your, my life has not been that bad. I was making a joke. What are your thoughts on that, Dave?
I've heard that. I think that all humor coming from pain to encapsulate it that way is a bit of nonsense. I think that humor, of course, is a fabulous way to cope with pain, to cope with sadness. It also can be a wonderful spur for humor. So it has that, certainly that important relation. Well, if, for instance, my book and my website, Sleeping Between Giants, like all truly inspiring stories, Sleeping Between Giants begins with a dead dog.
As they do.
As they all do.
Yeah.
I had a terrier, Oxford, and he was like the godfather in the neighborhood. His rule was paternal, but ruthless. When he passed away, our family was devastated, of course, especially Brisby, who was a Schnauzer poodle mix and was Oxford's mob enforcer. And with no crime boss, we were worried that Brisby was going to spiral into a world of booze and pills.
Yeah.
So we decided to go and get another crime boss. And that was where when we got Budley the Terrier. He'd been arrested on the streets of Waukegan for vandalism and panhandling, which was false. But also for being a stray dog. And that one was true. So from that adoption and that pain of losing a dog, Sleeping Between Giants began. It grew from there, in which I use columns and cartoons and comic strips to really tell the story of Budley and the people in his life.
Yeah.
That's great. Okay, Lee, I know that he, from interviewing you before and some of your other content that we've talked about over the years, I've actually known you for several years. I know that you had quite the episode with your marriage and all these other things, and it was a very bad year, one year in particular. Is that part of the scenario for you?
Absolutely. I agree with Dave in that that all humor comes from pain. No, some humor comes from humor because
right.
Things are funny. But I do think I really have come to believe even more because of personal experiences that humor is a fantastic tool for developing resilience, a really good way to deal with pain, to process pain. Not that you're denying it. You know, I'll tell you what I get upset about is when people say, oh, yeah, you make jokes to deflect the pain. No, I'm not deflecting the pain at all. Believe me, I process. I'm processing the pain. Yeah. I've lived with the pain. But it's a way to help you heal from the pain, to change your perspective about what you went through. Dave's book, Sleeping Between Giants, I was more like sleeping with the enemy, as it turned out. So, you know, like you said, a bad year. There was death, destitution, devastation, divorce. All the bad D's happened to me. And humor was really a great way to get through that. Or it was really what I had left when everything else, you know, all those outward trappings are gone. The husband, the family, the jobs, the house, the car. I had myself and my sense of humor. And at one point I determined that was what made me feel like myself again. Whenever I could laugh or make someone else laugh, it felt like I was coming back to myself or recovering that real core. You know, all the outward trappings were gone and that I could rebuild from there. So I determined, you know, they can't take that away from me. You know, that is part of me. So I process that way. And, you know, in this past talking about the pandemic, and it has been hard for humor people, for comics, for anybody that's in that kind of business. But it's really also brought to the fore how important it is. And when you mentioned like Humor Outcast, take a humor break. That's a really good way to deal with this relentless pressure and stress that we're all living with. Take a little humor break and then you go back to dealing with the serious things. But so much of the physical and emotional and mental stress has been relieved and you can think more clearly. So pain definitely has its place. Pain and humor, you know, an interesting interplay between the two of them.
I will say this. The first time I had a kidney stone, I wasn't sure what was happening. I crawled into the emergency room on my hands and knees. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if I was having a heart attack.
Right.
And I had,
or possibly a child.
Yeah, one of the two. And I had my hand on you know, that part of my back.
Yeah.
And the first thing that the ER nurse said, have you ever had a kidney stone? And so on that night, if this is true, that all humor comes from pain, I should have been like Richard Pryor.
Funny stuff.
Robin, good point.
Robin Williams. I should have been hysterical that night.
That was hilarious.
Yeah. And I wouldn't wish that on anyone. Let me tell you.
Last week, one day, I had to back out of another thing when you said about the kidney stone. 2 weeks ago, St. Bill. I'd never had a kidney stone. I do, in fact, have kidneys, and I've had kidney beans, but I've never had a kidney stone. My husband had a kidney stone, and he said the same thing. And I know women who have had them, and they would much rather have a child again than a kidney stone. So I just had this, just like that, this overwhelming, acute, horrible, bent over pain, crawling, crying. Mm-hmm. And so everyone rushed me to the ER. And it turns out it was not a kidney stone, as they thought. It was a bowel obstruction. Oh, but I think the pain, and I said, I would rather give birth to a litter of cheetahs than have that pain again. It was horrible. And the ER doc said to me, well, you told me, are you a humor writer? I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, well, this will be great material for you.
Yeah.
No, that's not how this works. Really.
That's funny. Lee, I'll stay with you.
Okay.
How do you pick topics like bouncing forward and things like that?
Well, a lot, you know, I always say I mind my life and I mind the lives of others. So if you're spending any time with me, I'm going to use you. I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
But I can tell you this right now. I will use you. And I know some really funny stories and things about people that would play very well. And I won't use them because it would be embarrassing to that person. And even if no one else knew, if I changed names and all of that, they would know. And the friendship is more important to me than a couple of funny lines or a funny story.
Sure.
So I do, you know, I like to make the joke about myself or in good, you know, good nature about others. I would write a lot about my mother. I've always told Dave, my mother, she was like the Yogi Berra of mothers. I mean, she said things that just made absolutely no sense, but I know exactly what she meant.
Yes.
So I'll do things like that. And I the pandemic gave me things to write about, not like Dave, because Dave is just so stinking clever.
Yeah.
And I just can't do the way he does. But
what do you mean?
Well, isn't that, wait, let me read. Dave is so stinking clever.
Oh, okay.
And isn't that what you wanted me to say?
There you go.
Yeah. And honestly, though, I mean, his book is hilarious in a different way from mine.
Sure.
There's a reason why he wins humor awards and why this book is an award winner. It's just hilarious. He's witty and funny and clever. For me, the pandemic I was having pandemic brain. I mean, you can't believe the stupid things I did over and over again. I think, you know, and I think a lot of people could relate to that. So I got a lot of blog posts and stories out of the stupid things that I did because I think we were all very distracted or were constantly worried. And the things that were automatic, you know, you're putting the milk in the things, you know, the stupid things, putting the milk in the garbage and the garbage in the refrigerator and that kind of stuff. Oh, I did things like that over and over and over. So I found, you know, some humor there. But I write from life, and I think you're really successful, and Dave is really good at this. Mm-hmm. I'll make references to topical things, cultural references, but Dave is really good at making the popular, the topical, what's in the news, making it personal to what it's just like he did with the COVID sniffing dog. Or Dave, tell them about Budley in space.
All right, well, I will.
That's a good idea.
Well, you know, taking off on what Lee said about mining your life, I mine the news too.
Yeah.
And you know, I wrote over the many years, I've written parenting columns and radio and TV commentary, and they're all based. I mean, not all of them, but a preponderance of my work is based on stories from the front section of the national news. My upcoming book, it's book two of Sleeping Between Giants. It's called Ask a Terrier, and it's an advice column called Professional Advice from a Licensed Terrier. And in it, Budley gives advice from people who write in on a wide range of topical issues, like that, the COVID sniffing dogs I mentioned, and Lee just mentioned when billionaires went into space. And I wondered, why was Budley turned down? Shouldn't he be going into space? That's what he wanted to talk about. And I did a piece recently on the dog's view on infrastructure repairs. You know, this is an issue that affects dogs too. Yeah. It hits us all. They just don't have to pay any taxes for it. Yeah. Now it's interesting because, again, Lee and I have talked about this kind of writing, one being outside in, the other being inside out. Mm-hmm. I am more from the outside in. Now, the thing about Lee's writing that's always impressed me so much is that she has the ability to make me laugh and cry and be inspired all in the same paragraph.
Oh, you read that perfectly.
Thank you. My writing isn't like that. Lee's is different that way. And in My Pineapples Went to Houston, she offers, it's really, at one point I remember there's this heartbreaking story about the worst day of her life. And I hope you don't mind me talking about that, Lee, but it concludes with Lee and her dog covered in cow poop and showering in a car wash. And wasn't even the worst part of the day.
Oh, wow.
It got worse. It was worse. It went downhill. It went downhill from there. So, you know, we do have different approaches to writing, but essentially we come from the same place. We do figure out how to use the world around us and our own experiences to reflect what we're concerned about, what we're thinking about, what we think is funny.
Yeah. Yeah. You two, a lot of times people that listen to this podcast when there's authors on is a lot of them are aspiring writers themselves. A lot of them just enjoy reading and they like to know about the authors and their methodology. You talked a little bit about some of the similarities that you guys have when it comes to process. Dave, for example, you mentioned that a lot of times you can't even turn it off. And I've had musicians tell me the same thing. You know, every once in a while, just a certain pattern of melodies and all that come to them and they feel like they have to work on it right then. Mm-hmm. So in terms of your approach, your methodology, I'll kind of, whichever one wants to pick up, how do you guys approach that alike and maybe in different ways?
Lee, you want to take that one or should I go with it?
Well, thanks, Dave. sure, just repeat what I say. Yeah, what she said.
That's
true. That's pretty much how he does. Yeah, exactly.
Just be careful. We don't want to sound like we're mansplaining. and Lee, and by the way, Lee, if you don't know what mansplaining is, let me explain it to you.
Lee, let's just be quiet. This is Billy's show. He's gone.
Go
just go
deal.
Ahead, Bill.
He's
okay,
been
go
sitting
ahead.
On that and sitting on that.
I was at work. This was a couple of weeks ago, and I said that, and my boss happens to be a female, and I said that to her, and she was like, "Oh, let me tell you." And you know, she was getting, and then she caught it. She goes, I know what mansplaining is.
Well, Dave and I both cut our teeth in a newsroom back in the 70s. So I said to Dave, it's real hard to be offended after that.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, that's where I perfected my vulgarities and practical joking and everything else. But that is true. We both really did have kind of similar backgrounds that way. And something that Dave retained that, I don't know, I lost it. Dave is fast. Mm-hmm. I am quick-witted, but I'm not a fast writer. Dave can bang out a story like that. Now, he may go back and revise it, and think of a better word here and there. I am much unless in those rare instances, I'll get an inspiration. And something else, sometimes this happens too. Dave and I have talked about this. You'll get this line or a joke and you'll think, oh, that's great. Yeah. And so you kind of write a story around it just so you can use that joke. But once you get into it and the writing takes over, the process mm-hmm. takes over, you get through with the piece and that joke has no place in it. And it kills you. Oh, it kills okay. you to cut those words. And they're such good words and you love yeah. those words and you don't want to hurt their feelings. And I had an editor tell me, but Lee, you can use them again. You can find a home for them. So I'm probably more plodding of a writer than Dave is. And when I get stuck, this boy, if you are an aspiring writer of any kind, if you are not hooked up with a writer's group or a writing buddy or partner mm-hmm. or somebody, do that because we all get stuck. And yeah. basically, Dave gives me every idea. I'll call him lamenting. And this is wrong. He goes, okay, here's, you got three posts. Here's this, this, and this. And for him, I say things like, nice shirt. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did you lose a little weight? Looking good. So I'm very helpful to I feel like so. I'm
self-effacing humor, Lee.
Yeah. So I'm a little slower. I'm a little slower, okay. And Dave is probably. I think you're fat. You're quick.
With the ideas. Yes, but yeah. You know, it's interesting talking about our backgrounds. They are similar. I came from the City News Bureau of Chicago mm-hmm. before that closed down. That was 125-year-old news gathering operation. And the thing is, we were three shifts a night. It never closed because there mm-hmm. were always news people in the office. And that's where I learned to love your writing, but don't fall in love with your mm-hmm. writing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because you have to mm-hmm. learn to write something, enjoy it. As Lee said, say, you know, that's really good writing. It doesn't fit here. Mm-hmm. And let it go.
Yeah.
Don't throw it away.
Right.
You will use it again someday.
Right.
I mean, I have stacks of notebooks that have, and I'll go through them on mm-hmm. From time to time to come up with other ideas or say, mm-hmm. how did that come about? You know?
Yeah.
Okay. So it leads me to then when I do my writing, I reveal myself and my own thoughts and my opinions through my characters, mm-hmm. okay, through interactions and through their dialogue. As I said before, the conversations between dogs mm-hmm. in the dog park. And I have ongoing characters. I have a Bernese mountain dog who's always bragging about himself in metaphors about mountains, even though he's never seen a mountain. He just knows that's in his name. And then there's another reference to, I bring up a character, Roxy the Boxer.
Oh.
Poor Roxy. Yeah. Lee, poor Roxy. Roxy, we've never met. Mm-hmm. All we really know about Roxy from the dogs in the dog park is that he was taken away one day in a windowless police van after some incident that involved school children and a bus driver and firefighters and the police and U.S. Postal Division. There was a lot of...
It was not good.
The dogs don't even know the story. They just know, he went off someplace and where he could live on a farm and run. And that's all we know about Roxy. Yeah. But using these characters, it really... As I write, and I write a lead, and my leads from my old City News Bureau days, my leads are very tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are.
I do not build towards a joke. Okay. If I haven't gotten you, if I haven't hooked you within 20 words, I've lost. Your mm-hmm. interest is not going. So mm-hmm. I have to do something that's going to hook your interest. And as I'm writing, I'm never sure what direction this piece is going to go. But for writers... I found that very common. The more they write, the more the writing tells them where to go next.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, it's like an inverted pyramid. Start with this enormous amount of information and you pare it down until finally, you know, aha, mm-hmm. I'm going to do this piece by having the dogs in the dog park talk about it. And the Bernese mountain dog is a perfect person. Well, I'll have him talk about So I use the characters as the mouthpieces, essentially, for airing my own views.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Again, that's how Lees and Minor are. We approach it somewhat differently.
Yeah.
But we still get to the finish line.
And yeah. I think that's really true what you said. I mean, sometimes where you end up is not at all where you started out or where you thought this was going to go. And maybe the general idea you start with this sort of amorphous thing that you don't quite have your hands around. And the more you write, and I think this is so true of fiction writers, the character, or Dave uses characters in his, and I use, you know, reality-based characters in my writing. They start taking on their own life and their own voice. It's kind of weird.
Couldn't know how it happens.
And you end up with something at the end that's a little bit different. So I think what Dave said about love your writing, but don't fall in love with, you have to be able to let it go. And you have to be able to recognize when something better comes along that trumps what your first idea was. And you say, oh, but I wanted it to, well, yeah, but it went in a different way. And again, I mean, it's, you know, it's like your own children. You love them, but, you know, you don't want them in everything. Put them away.
Yeah.
You can take them out again, use them. You know, when you need a kid for something else, you take it out. Sure. Same thing with your words.
And going off a little bit on what Lee is saying here, I recommend, when I talk to other writers, humor writers, groups, I also recommend don't necessarily go with your first impulse.
Yeah.
Okay. Let it percolate. Mm-hmm. I mentioned the billionaires in space before. And I thought, okay, how am I going to have somebody write in about that to Budley for Ask a Terrier? And what's he going to say? Well, he didn't go into space. Well, why? Well, he's a billionaire. He's not a billionaire. Well, how am I? And I played with that. I could not figure out how to move that story forward. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I went to the NASA website. And I went to, what are the qualifications for an astronaut? And they'd have a whole list of them.
And Budley didn't have any of them?
And Budley did. Well, for instance, they have to have a height of 5'2" to 6'3". Budley's 24 inches minus a tail.
Yeah.
So he didn't make the cut on that. But that then became the premise, if you will, for the piece. That he believed that he had the money for it. He just didn't have the right astronaut requirements, and he was very troubled by that. Yeah. So if I had not percolated that one, if I had gone with my first impulse, I would have had a much weaker story.
Yeah.
It wasn't very funny.
Yeah.
And this one I thought was a much more successful.
Yeah. And sometimes even though we're writing humor and it's a humorous and imaginative thing, but that doesn't mean we don't do research. Words, so important. The more specific the word and the more official sounding, you know, the official terminology of something. I mean, you don't want to say vegetable when you can say zucchini. So going to the NASA website and say, well, I don't think he's tall enough. Well, he's 24 inches. You know, I mean, that is funny.
Yeah.
That's funny. So, and Google has made that part of writing easier. You can quick look something
so
up.
So, Lee, and this is an interesting point. Do you do a lot of research before you sit down and write the piece?
I try to do as little as possible. I don't like facts to get in the way of the opinions I have formed and what I'm trying to tell people. No, I think I kind of do it as I'm going, or like I'll get an idea and I'll say, is this a thing? You know, and I'll look it up, or I'll say, and especially if there's something been on social media, because I'm not, you know, really, really a big social media person. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I'll scan the news, what's going on. So I research as I go along, especially if I'm, especially for terminology. Yeah. You know, for things like that, because it's so much funnier when you can say things in an official way as opposed to the everyday street person talk, you know?
Yeah.
So I use it that way.
I'm
sorry, Bill. Did you have a question?
Getting back to like, hey, this is your guys' show. No, we're good.
So, Bill.
We're good. No, it was very interesting. That's why I just stayed out of it, because, and you know, what's interesting about that is podcasters like myself, I'll sometimes sort of grab onto a news story and do a commentary about it. Yeah. So when something is really burning hot in social media or in the news or both, you know, that's a time to maybe get a commentary about it when people are searching for content for
interested in it.
And there's a lot of times when I, you know, I'm formulating my commentary and I have a pretty good idea of where I want to go. And in the process of researching it, I've softened my opinion or I've changed it a little bit.
Right. That is interesting.
That is. Yeah. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Which when is why I stay out of research, you know.
But it's funny because I do the topical pieces. I don't start my piece until I have done a lot of research.
Really? Okay.
Yes. I look up the story, whatever the story happens to be. I look up as several different versions of it because I want to get some more breadth on that. And then sometimes there'll be related issues or other terms, and I'll look those up too. As I write, I put them all on one document on my computer, and then I go through them. I highlight certain phrases, and then I write in the margin what an idea just popped into my head.
I do that, yeah.
And then I finish this whole thing, and I haven't even sat down and started the piece yet. Yeah. Of course, I have started it. The research is part of it. But then I can see, aha, it's the bones. This is giving me the skeleton on which I can now flesh out the body of that piece.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
And what's really funny to me, too, is sometimes everything turns on one word, on a word choice. And that's where an editor or somebody with a good eye, you know, if you don't have an official editor, can make all the difference in the world. Way back in that other century, you know, the one that I really liked when I was young and my very first book, I think I used the word shocking or surprising or something. And I was like, you know, okay, I'll go with that. Yeah, fine. And I had an editor, the publisher, and he put a line through and he said, stunning. And I can't, and of course I know the word stunning, but for some reason it didn't, I was stunned. It absolutely changed everything. Or I remember one time when I changed something from made me dizzy to made me woozy. And woozy just has such a different connotation to it. Like, whoa, you know, and it's amazing how that refining. So like Dave said, don't necessarily go with your first instinct, you know.
Interesting.
Refine.
About the editor, let me give the dark side of that story. The dark side, I wrote a piece and I used a silly joke in there about how do you get to Carnegie Hall practice. I use as a toss-off joke and everybody knows it. When the piece came out, the editor had rewritten that as, do you know the way to Carnegie Hall? And I didn't know I didn't know what to do. But I talked to the publisher. He thought it was hysterical. That was the funniest joke he ever heard. And from then on, she didn't question my joke. She corrected the words and said where there were problems, but she didn't make the jokes better.
Yeah. You have to have someone with a sense. If you're writing humor, it's really important to have someone who connects with you. And you know, my day job, another love of mine is I teach English as a second language because of course I love language. Sure. Even languages I don't speak or that I don't know won't stop me from speaking them. But that's kind of, there are some really great jokes that way, Dave, when you are translating, you know, Google translating from another, is this the way that one would take a mode of transportation to reach Carnegie Hall. That's just you, but you can get
one of those. It loses something in the original.
Just a little. Just a little.
You guys mentioned in your intro, Irma Bombeck, people like that.
Yeah.
One of the people that I always liked as somebody who watched words was George Carlin. Okay.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like for example, self-help books. If you're reading a book that was written by somebody else, or you're going to a seminar given by somebody else, that's not self-help. That's help. You know, just little things like that. Who are some of your inspirations in terms of when you read them, you said, you know what? This is something that really inspires me. I bet you I could come up with some interesting perspectives, too.
Dave has some really, really clear-cut answers for
that. It's interesting, yeah, because we have talked about this one, mm-hmm. Lee, and James Thurber had a huge influence on me becoming a humor writer. When I was in junior high school, I used to get out books of cartoons, the New Yorker cartoons and such. And I loved reading cartoons, even the New Yorker when I'm 13 and I don't get most of the references what they are. But there was a wonderful librarian, Ms. Wood, and Ms. Wood was just a sweet Southern lady and knew every book. She'd read every book in the world. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, "Have you ever heard of this James Thurber fellow?" I said, "No, I haven't." She took me over. She said, "Read some of his. You might get I see you like humor." So I took this James Thurber book, which was called Let Your Mind Alone, interestingly mm-hmm. enough. And he was writing during a time when self-help books had become very popular again. You know, they go in cycles. Mm-hmm. And I stood there in the library reading James Thurber, and I started to laugh. And I started laughing hard. And then I had an epiphany from that. I thought, how is it possible that this writer is making me laugh this hard with just words?
Yeah. No picture.
He's just using words. And that was a very moving moment for me.
Yeah, I thought, that was like an aha moment.
That was a true aha moment. And from then, I read everything James Thurber did and then went on to the Algonquin Roundtable and then other writers. And they had a powerful powerful effect on me. So did Mad Magazine, though.
Yeah. The highs and the low, the highbrow and the lowbrow.
Magazine was, it's a shame that it's not, old ones are not still taught because it teaches you what satire is. And nobody knows anymore.
Oh, exactly. That's true.
But Magazine could teach you that. So those were two of my big
influences.
In life.
And you said Algonquin Roundtable. I always tell Dave, most of my humor background and my sense of timing, you know, all of the things that you learn if you take a comedy writing class or like when I did stand up came naturally to me, came from sitcoms. I told Dave, I watched sitcoms straight from morning till night because my mother sat me in front of the TV. She was older when she had me and she was tired. So I watched a lot of TV, but that, and I had two older sisters, much older, like 8 and 11 years older than I.
Oh, okay.
And I remember being up in their bedroom one time and I found my sister's literature book. It was either high school or maybe a freshman college, you know, literature book, an anthology. Remember how we'd have anthologies. And I read Ogden Nash and Dorothy Parker, Algonquin. And I was, you know, maybe like Dave, 10, 11 years old. And I didn't quite, I mean, of course, I didn't get the brilliance, but I thought, this is like kind of dark, you know, but it's funny. Mm. It's funny. Like you can joke about things. Maybe that's where the joking to get through pain, you know, comes from. You can joke about things like this. And I thought that was like, oh, that was so great. So really it was that. And then learning timing. But I think too, and my mom, you know, my mom had no idea that she was a natural comedian, totally unintentional, you know, totally unintentionally. But I do think that some people are just born, you know, born funny. And I don't mean the way you look because that happens. Mm. But, you know, I think you just have a natural bent maybe or to appreciate certain kinds of humor. But yeah, I would say those were definitely. I can specifically remember that. And then as soon as I was old enough, I started subscribing to National Lampoon. But because my mother probably wouldn't have let me read that. But
Well, I'll throw you one curveball. I guess it's not much of a curveball, but
I'm sitting on my biggest curve, Bill. So go ahead.
Is it true that to be a good writer, you have to read?
Oh, read. Yeah. And you have to sound out all the words. And just to here's a little tip. Long vowels say their names. So that helps. But absolutely.
You have to read.
You have to read. You have to read to be a good writer, to know what. And in fact, that's kind of how we teach writing in school is modeling, you know, not plagiarizing, but modeling. Well, you know, modeling because, you know, it's just like anything else that's new to someone. If you're teaching children and you say, okay, sit down and write something, or, you know, sit down and cook this or make this, what's the first thing people say most of the time is, well, can you give me an example? Can you show me an example? And it's like that with writing too. And of course, if you're reading, you're being exposed to writing. And that was, you know, maybe that was sort of, an implicit influence on me. I was a huge reader from Deputy Dog on. That was like the first book that I learned how to read, and then Dr. Seuss. But, you know, speaking as an educator, as an ESL teacher, when I teach, you know, everybody that wants to learn a new language, they want to speak. They want to speak.
Yeah.
But before you can speak, you need to listen. And you have to hear the words, and you have to get the rhythm. And, you know, you can have every perfect sound, but if you don't have the rhythm of English, the way we connect sounds and that sort of thing, you can't really speak. And I think it's this parallel to, if you want to write, wonderful, but you need to read first.
Yeah,
absolutely. Reading is imperative. And you have to read extensively. Mm-hmm. It's, and I'll go to the dark side here and say, it's not, once again, you know, it's not enough just to read
what you're
young. If you're an English teacher, you have an English teacher, rather, not just reading what the English teacher says. You have to read broadly to learn how to write. Silas Marner ain't going to do it. Okay. You need to write. You need to read a lot more extensively, and read everything.
Everything.
Read everything you can get your hands on.
Things you don't like, things that are not your interest. Absolutely. And it, you know, as Bill said too, sometimes it changes your. It opens your mind and maybe changes.
Absolutely, no, I never Bill. Thought that was of it that way. Was right on. Yeah, that's an excellent point. It does change your view, but read it all. Read everything you can. And, you know, let it influence you.
Yeah. And steal everything you can.
Absolutely.
Change some letters around and, you know.
Well, that's an old showbiz axiom. You know that one. It's if it works, use it.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
All right. We've been talking to Dave Jaffe, and the book is Sleeping Between Giants, Life, if you can call it that, with a Terrier. And the latest edition of My Pineapples Went to Houston, this is the second edition, is the book from Lee Gatan. Where can people find your guys' books?
Well, you can find both of our books. I'll start with those through Amazon, hard copies and ebooks. Smashwords has mine on there if you want just the ebook. Of course, order through your bookstore. And have your friends go in and order it also and demand it and make a big stink so that they know who we are.
Exactly.
And then
take several friends with you. Actually.
Right. Yeah. And then also on both of our websites, there is a link that we've put in. Lee and I have started doing speaking engagements, and we've put in a link to try to reach out to book clubs who might want to be interested in reading our books and then having us come to your book club and talk about it if you're interested, just as we did. So there are portals for all of those on my website. I know Lee is in the process of getting that
up too.
And should, beautiful.
Yeah.
So you can get those through us too, because Lee and I decided to make a two book set that was, you know, discounted so that people could access both of our books and kind of get a feel for what we're trying to do.
Fantastic. So that's a great way to do it through our websites, because you're getting a deal, two books, both books for $20, right?
That's
which
right.
is like a $10 discount. Yeah, as a discount off of buying them individually.
And my website is sleepingbetweengiants.com.
And I'm leegaitan.com, just my name.com.
Well, what about social media, Twitter and all those?
Twitter, LG Pineapple. I think and Facebook is My Pineapples Went to Houston.
And my Twitter handle is Ask a Terrier, and also on Facebook you can put in Ask a Terrier or Sleeping Between Giants. And I'd recommend Sleeping Between Giants. That's the more active one.
Well, not only has this podcast been very entertaining, but for anyone who has an inclination to write, or even just someone who is an avid reader, I want to thank you both. You gave some really good insights into that process. And it's just like anything else. Humor writing seems like, well, you're just writing funny things. It's a lot more complex than that. And there's a methodology, there's research, and there's practice, and there's just a lot of things that go into it. Like the old saying says, right? Dying is easy, comedy is hard, right?
Sure is. Okay.
Well, thank you both so much for being on the program.
Oh, Bill, thank you. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Lee, call me.
Yeah. Okay. Also, I want to send out a shout out to Donna Kavanaugh, all the people at humoroutcast.com. I'm sure this is going to be on their website. So shout out to them. My name is Billy Dees, and you can find me on Twitter. Real easy to find on Twitter at Billy Dees. And that's pretty much my screen name on any social media platform that I'm on. So I'm real easy to find. Thank you both very much. Thank you for listening to our podcast today. And I'll be back again next week.